So a couple things here as we get rolling. Number one, kiddos are staying up here today. It's the last Sunday of the month. So we have some of these bags. I'm going to pass them out in just a sec. I also need four volunteers to just read our scripture this morning. So you have to stay back there. And I will not pick all children. So adults, you don't get off the hook. I'll do a two and two, but, you know, other than that, and you all know me. I have no problem waiting. It is not a big deal. Sophia, yep, definitely. And Brennan, I think you all have read recently. So Sophia and Brennan, come on up here. And I need two adults. Caleb, you're not. Yeah, Brian, come on up. And Peter, yep, please, thanks. So one, why don't you stand in order so you can kind of make sure that we go in order here. Give a quick little read through. You can do that while I'm passing these out. This is Matthew 2, all of the chapter, if I'm not mistaken, 1 to 23. You can just give it a little read through. I'm going to pass these out while those guys get a chance to peek. Anybody need a bag? Yeah, Elena, definitely. Jason, you want one? No? Okay. Thank you. A couple in that. I got one over here. Do I hear two, three, anyone? I'm just killing time here, people, so happily take my time. And if, you know, your child decides, Mara, you need one? Got it. Happy doodling. Couple for this row. For this row. Adam? Yeah, let me just give you a couple here. Extra one for you, buddy. Okay, they're there in case anybody decides that they need one who maybe didn't quite get it in. There you go. So this is a chunk, which is why I needed some help this morning. Can you hold and read? Is that doable? You do not have to read that part there. So Sophia's going to get us started, and after she reads, I'm going to say just a quick few thoughts, and then we'll move on to Brennan, and off we go.
After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him." When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. When he had called together all the people's chief priests and the teachers of the law, he asked them where the Messiah was to be born. "Bethlehem in Judea," they replied, "for this is what the prophet has written. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judea, are by no means last among the rulers of Judah, but for out of you will come a ruler who will be the shepherd of my people Israel."
All right, so we get these visitors from the east, Magi, wise men, right? This is that story, in case you're not dialed in. They show up in Jerusalem, and surprise, surprise, tell Herod that a new king has been born. All right, Brennan.
Then Herod called Magi,
Magi, yeah.
Magi, secretly, and found out from the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and search carefully for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and worship him." After they heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen when it rose went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother, Mary, and they bowed down to him and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route.
Okay, so they go and worship, and, you know, their instructions were to head back to Herod and kind of give him the exact location of the child. They get a dream and go back home a different way. Okay.
When they had gone, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream. "Get up," he said, "take the child and his mother and escape to Egypt. Stay there until I tell you, for Herod is going to search for the child to kill him." So he got up, took the child and his mother during the night, and left for Egypt, where he stayed until the death of Herod. And so was fulfilled what the Lord had said through the prophet, "Out of Egypt I called my son." When Herod realized that he had been outwitted by the Magi, he was furious, and he gave orders to kill all the boys in Bethlehem and its vicinity who were 2 years old and under, in accordance with the time he had learned from the Magi. Then what was said through the prophet Jeremiah was fulfilled. A voice is heard in Ramah, weeping and great mourning. Rachel weeping for her children and refusing to be comforted because they are no more.
So, Joseph gets a dream. You got to get out. They flee to Egypt, right? And Herod realizes that maybe he's been duped. And so he orders this extermination. It's horrific. It's terrible. It's gruesome. It's really without explanation. It's one of those moments in the scriptures that leaves us probably quite uneasy, right? But there it is. And then we continue with this last part.
After Herod died, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt and said, "Get up, take the child and his mother, and go to the land of Israel, for those who were trying to take the child's life are dead." So he got up, took the child and his mother, and went to the land of Israel. But when he heard that Archelaus was reigning in Judea in place of his father Herod, he was afraid to go there. Having been warned in a dream, he withdrew to the district of Galilee, and he went and lived in a town called Nazareth. So was fulfilled what was said through the prophets, that he would be called a Nazarene.
All right. Can we thank these readers a second for being courageous and brave up here? Thanks, guys and gal. All right. Whew. So there's a lot here, a lot we could talk about. You know, we could consider that Jesus, you know, in just a few verses, Matthew covers probably years of time. You know, when the Magi come, most scholars think Jesus is not a baby anymore. He's of some age, maybe one or two. How long are they in Egypt? Who really knows? But it's probably not weeks or months. It's probably longer than that. So a lot of time is covered here. We could talk about that. We could talk about how Herod is a lot like Pharaoh. Remember the story of the Israelites in Egypt, and Pharaoh kills all the young boys. Moses escapes by his mom putting him in a basket down the river, right? We could talk about that, and how about Matthew's trying to make this connection that Jesus is the new Moses, and that'd be interesting to discuss. We're not going to talk about any of those things, though, this morning. Here's what strikes me about this passage, that often life doesn't go as expected. And we see this from a couple of different perspectives here in these verses. For Herod, life doesn't go as expected. Herod did not wake up on the morning of the Magi's visit and think to himself, you know what? I bet some visitors from the east are going to arrive, and I bet they're going to tell me that a new king has been born, you know, and I'll try and get them to tell me where. Like, none of that entered his mind when he woke up. This was not on his radar screen. And so the idea that Herod was expecting a new king to be born right underneath his nose, I mean, Bethlehem is just kind of down the road. No, Herod was not expecting this. And what we see in Herod is a bit of, shall we just say, extreme reaction, right? As things don't go according to plan for him, as life doesn't unfold the way that he expected it to, what does Herod do? Well, he goes to this extreme measure of having all of these children in Bethlehem and the surrounding area killed. And when I read about Herod here, it's tempting to just dismiss him, to think this guy is some lunatic, maniacal, power-hungry, and to just dismiss Herod. I've been challenged this week, though, to ask myself, am I like Herod at all? Is there any way in which his story is like my story? Because you know what happens when life doesn't go as you expect? When life doesn't go according to plan, do you know what's happening? One of the things that's happening is that we're realizing in those moments that we don't have as much control over our lives as we thought we did. Right? We had a plan. We had an expectation. And that expectation hasn't been met. The plan isn't going the way we thought it would. And that tells us that we are not as in control of our lives as we'd like to think we are. And so what do we often do in response in those moments? When life goes sideways and we realize the lack of control, do you know what we tend to do? What I tend to do? I claw and I scratch for any semblance of control that I can get. I double down on the effort to gain some control of my life. And I think that's what Herod does here. A king's been born unexpectedly. To him, this means someone's going to take his seat on the throne, usurp him. He's going to lose everything. He's not in control of his destiny anymore. And so what does he do? He tries to take control again in the most extreme, horrific way you could imagine. But that's what he's trying to do, gain control of the situation. And again, this happens to me regularly. And we've been remodeling a bathroom for the last 7 months. It's right on schedule. Don't worry about it. And we're nearing the end, but for a season there, leading up to Thanksgiving, we were working really hard trying to get it to a point that it was functional. And so every Saturday, I would wake up with a plan. Today, I am going to, whatever, complete X, tile the floor, get started on the trim, whatever it was. I had some expectations about how the day was going to go, plans firmly in grasp. And then around 10 or 1 or 4, somewhere in the day, you know, Bethany might come to me and say, hey, you know, JP's going here and Zeke's got this going on and Rhea's headed in this direction. Could you just kind of hit the pause button and maybe take a kid here or go pick up a kid from there or go and run that errand? And do you know what my response was? Oh, gosh, yeah, I guess I can do that, you know. What's happening in that moment? What's happening in that situation? My plans are not going according to plan. My expectations for the day are not being met. And in a sense, I'm losing control. I no longer have control of my schedule and of the way the day is going to unfold because this new thing's been introduced. And so what do? I double down. I try to get some control. I do it in the most mature way possible by pouting, right? I guess I can do it. I mean, maybe, you know, if I need to do it, yeah, I can take a break, right? That's what's going on there, at least part of what's going on. And so I want to dismiss Herod. I want to say that his reaction to this reality, I don't do it at all. I'm not like him in any way. I'm just actually not so sure that's true. And I wonder about you, if you see a bit of this in yourself, maybe in one way or another. So this story has a lot to do with life not going according to plan. We see Herod's reaction to it. And then, of course, we have Mary and Joseph. See, I do not think that the way the story unfolds is the way that Mary and Joseph had expected it to go. Chapter 2 begins on a high note, right? These wise men, these magi show up, and everything about it is impressive. They're kind of cool, mysterious figures from a foreign land. They've traveled an enormous distance. They have unusual knowledge about the world, and they come bearing gifts for a king. And I imagine that as this all went down, Joseph and Mary might have been thinking to themselves, this is pretty cool. This is pretty cool. I mean, they've come to worship this son that's ours. And I wonder if they started to think about not just three people showing up to bring gifts and worship, but I wonder if they started to imagine the masses, lines winding their way through the streets of Jerusalem, coming to see the new king as their son ascended the throne, because that's what they were told was going to happen. Can I just bring you back a little bit in the story? when the angel comes to Mary, tells her that she's going to bear a child, this is what the angel says, and I quote, "The Lord will give him the throne of his father David." Now, how could Mary and Joseph not expect their son to rise to power, to become the political and military king who would restore Israel's fortunes, right? And so we have this high note in verses 1 to 12, but then in 13, things take a turn as Joseph is warned in this dream to get out. And not to, like, get out when he feels like it or when he's got time to pack up. There's a sense of urgency in the angel's message. The word escape is used. It is time to run. And where to? Oh, to Egypt. You know, that friendly place that worked out oh so well for the people of Israel, right? And so as I try to enter into this story and put myself in the shoes of these brand new parents who are being asked to bear an enormous responsibility and take a huge risk, I can't help but wonder if they asked questions like, is this what we signed up for? Is this what things are going to be like? I thought God said he'd sit on David's throne. I don't think, friends, that this was the way they expected things to go, but I do want you to notice their response, at least part of their response. It's quite remarkable. It's trust and obedience. Someone may say, well, of course they trusted God and obeyed God. Of course, an angel came in Joseph's dream and told him to get out. Of course they, of course. And then I start thinking, if I had a dream tonight in which an angel came, whatever that was like, and said, hey, Chris, you should pack everybody up immediately and move to Honduras and stay there for, I don't know, an undisclosed amount of time. Don't worry, everything will be fine. I think I'd probably wake up and rationalize that dream away. I'd probably find a way to explain it to be not what it actually was, right? Maybe Joseph was more open to a dream like this. Maybe it was unmistakable. I don't know. But I don't want to just immediately kind of jump to this idea that, oh, they had no choice but to respond the way that they did. I'm not sure it was that simple. They trusted, they obeyed, maybe reluctantly, maybe easily, but that's their response. And so from Herod, from one side, and from Joseph and Mary, another, we get these reactions to this reality. And I think this story challenges us to ask this question of ourselves. When life doesn't go as expected, how will you respond? How will I respond? Mary and Joseph respond with trust and obedience. And I think that they're able to do this because at least the scriptures here seem to point us to this consistent idea that even when life doesn't go according to plan, God is with us. Right at every turn in the story, with every unexpected development, God is with them. And Joseph's dreams are clear indications of this. They're one way that we get a sense that this is true, but it's not the only way. It's not just his dreams that tell us that God is with us when life goes sideways. See, I want to suggest that it's actually Jesus himself that is the clearest evidence that God is with us. That it is the very life and experience of Christ that paints this unmistakable picture of a God who has gone to the greatest of lengths to ensure that we are never alone. alone. Just think about this story. Again, Matthew covers years, what are likely years, in just a matter of verses. But try and put yourself in the story for a moment. You know, Jesus is likely, again, a toddler. As he watches his mom and dad quickly pack up from the only home that he had ever known. And it's not hard to imagine that in that moment of departure, there were tears being shed that Mary and Joseph carried in their eyes, worry and fear. And then for weeks, Jesus and his parents traveled across the desert. Every step they took was one step away from what they knew and into the unknown. Fatigue must have set in, maybe hunger, thirst. Maybe they looked over their shoulder at every turn, wondering if Herod had kind of found out that they had fled and maybe was chasing after them. And then in Egypt, where everything was new, a new home, new people, new language, new customs, new culture. Now, who knows exactly how much Jesus would have remembered? Who knows? This is all speculation. This is all stuff we get to kind of be curious about and wonder about. But it's not hard to imagine that those experiences would have left an imprint on Christ. If we take Jesus' humanity seriously, it's not hard to imagine that those stories, that story of their time in Egypt would have been retold over and over again around the family dinner table. But I think the point for me is this. When you look at this story, it tells us again, as do the rest of the Gospels, that Jesus understands what it is like to live on this earth. He is not a stranger to what we experience. From his earliest days, he learned that life does not go according to plan. He experiences firsthand the horrendous way that anger and selfishness and a lust for power can turn people's lives upside down. I think he felt the fear of having to run. He saw his mom and dad having to navigate one difficulty after another. Jesus understands what it is like to live on this earth. And he promises to be with us. Which means that today, I mean, even in this very moment as we breathe here in this room and have thoughts running through our mind and responsibilities weighing on us, even in this moment, Christ is with us. And if tomorrow life goes exactly as you plan it, praise God, Christ is with you. And if tomorrow it feels like you're in some foreign land where nothing is familiar, where it feels like you've lost most semblance of control, Christ is with you. And he knows what you are experiencing. The writer of Hebrews says this, "For since he himself has now been through suffering and temptation, he knows what it is like when we suffer and are tempted, and he is wonderfully able to help us." He himself has now been through suffering and temptation. The writer is saying, listen, Jesus has experienced what it means to be human in all of its joy and in all of its sorrow, in its difficulty and in its celebration. And because of that, not only does he know what that's like, but he is able to help us. And so as we close this morning with this story in mind, I want to invite you to do a bit of reflecting. and to first look back and then to look ahead. And so to look back, I want you to consider this question. This last year, what did not go as expected? The list might be quite long. In your life, in the life of the people you love, in this world, what did not go as expected? And by the way, this doesn't only have to be negative stuff. It could be stuff that is worthy of celebration, things that completely caught you by surprise but are reasons for joy. What did not go as expected this past year? And then related to that, given what we're talking about today, as you look back, can you see ways in which Christ was with you? So I'm just going to pause here. I'm going to give you a good minute or two to just think about that. Right where you are, let's be reflective together. Let's look backward together and let's see if we can recognize ways in which Christ has been with us. All sorts of things are coming to my mind. I don't know about yours, but I'm thinking about things worthy of celebration, like how tall my oldest son has become. I didn't expect that so fast. I think about Rodrigo leaving Comunidad Cristiana. I didn't expect that to happen this year. Think about invitations I've been given. Think about challenges that have been faced. And to be perfectly frank with you, sometimes I can, as I look back and am reflective in this moment, I can think about ways in which Christ is evident to me. There are other times this past year where I'm still not quite clear on that. But I think this is an important exercise, an important practice to be reflective people, to ask ourselves where Christ has been with us. Let's look ahead for a moment. What are your plans in this coming year? Can you offer them to God? Some of you maybe do resolutions, or you're going to be thinking about how you want to live differently in this next year. I applaud that. I think it's a great exercise to do as well. Chances are probably pretty good, though, that some of the plans that we have in this next year are not going to, like, go the way that we planned, right? And you may be a person who says, I don't do resolutions, you know, I don't do any of that stuff. Okay, I promise you, you still have expectations for this next year. They're probably just unspoken. Things that you hope are going to happen. Things that you think, yeah, life will just kind of unfold that way. I wonder, as we sit here, can you offer those things to God this morning? Or do you have to hold them so tightly to your chest that there's no room for anyone else to enter into those plans? Can you hold them open-handedly? So what are your plans? I just want to give you a second to think about that. Some of you've got them. They're written down there in a spreadsheet. You are ready to rock and roll. Others of you maybe haven't given this much thought. So what is it for you? What are you hoping? What are you expecting in this next year? Maybe there are some things in your life that are just very unclear today as you sit here. Can you offer the ambiguity to God, the uncertainty? Can you hold that open-handedly as well? And then this final question, when the unexpected comes, because again, it is going to come, how can you keep an eye out for Christ's presence? What can you do in those moments to remain mindful of that promise that Christ makes, that he is always with us, always? What might that look like for you? Because things are going to go sideways, and life is going to go off the tracks, and the plans that we have aren't going to perfectly work themselves out the way we thought they were. So what do we do in those moments? How do we remain mindful of Christ's presence with us? I want to invite you to pray with me here as we kind of move from this time into gathering around the table together. God, we look backward this morning, and we begin with gratitude, and we offer our thanksgiving to you for your faithfulness, your kindness, your compassion, your presence. And we ask, God, that we would have eyes to see you with us, Emmanuel. You would awaken us to that reality which is all around us. Give us eyes to see that. And as we stand on the edge of a new year, and we look ahead, whether we're resolution makers or not, we all in this moment of this year, we all kind of do some thinking about what we hope for, what we expect, what we are dreading, what we are not looking forward to. All of that is kind of wrapped up in this moment. And can we, God, this morning and in the days ahead, take whatever it is that is on our heart and mind and hold it openly and invite you to be a part of whatever that is. Your promise is that you are with us always, and sometimes you show up in dreams, visions that are maybe unmistakable. And you show up in the most ordinary, wonderfully ordinary of ways. And we give you thanks for all of it. Amen.